Good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he must be! And it is! Peter Wills!
Good afternoon, Villa fans. Good evening for those of you listening in the UK. It is a somber Craig here, ready to talk about our defeat in the Conference League and our exit at the hands of Olympiacos. I am joined once again by my good buddy Andy. Hello, Andy. How are you feeling?
Hi, Craig. Yeah. Hi, everyone. Bit deflated. It was one of those nights. I thought it was like Unai Emery was doing his best to spin all his plates while the Greeks went round smashing them all as they like to do. So one of those nights. But bit sad.
It is a bit sad. It's been like an incredible journey, I think, and we want to be grateful for that, absolutely. But there is certainly a feeling of deflation. I think that we all believe that this could be Aston Villa's first trophy in a number of years since 1996. Certainly, we were favourites. But it wasn't to be. Obviously, the season's not dead, and we'll talk more about our Champions League survival. But I guess we should take a moment to mourn the loss of a potential trophy, Andy.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is. It does feel like one has passed us by here, and it's maybe one that won't come along again. You know, it's a specific qualification process, isn't it? Finishing seventh, it's not the sort of thing you necessarily aim for. And but it's been an absolute joy, I think, to have European football back at the club. It's been absolutely wonderful to see all the fans on the continent traveling, you know, the guys, you know, posting videos and pictures of their travels from initially in Edinburgh all the way to sort of last night in Greece. So, and I think they've been a credit to the club as well, but it's been great to sort of see Villa back on that stage, back playing European football. And the thing is, we were favourites, but I think we were favourites not really based on an awful lot. You know, first year back in Europe, you know, for over 10 years, you can't be favourites for that, can you? Because as we've discovered, there are some wily old teams playing European football who normally play at a higher level as well, like Olympiacos. So we're always going to be up against it, really, to win the trophy, I think.
Well, it certainly didn't work out that way. We have to go all the way back. I just wanted to take a moment, just a couple of minutes, to review the journey, really. I don't want to also just thank everyone for checking out this channel. I went through the analytics the other day, and our most recent video was the biggest video we've ever done, and over 5,000 of you have joined us on this show. 5,000 unique visitors to the channel, which I think is quite incredible since we started in August, and with our magical promotion budget of absolutely zero. You've all got here through through word of mouth and through and obviously through the social media stuff. So just a quick thank you for everyone for supporting the channel and liking and subscribing and all that good stuff. Hopefully, like, certainly we've had a lot of fun doing it, and we would love nothing more than to bring back this gather around again to talk about a Champions League campaign next year. But let's just have a little walk down memory lane, Andy. So it started off all the way back in August. August 23rd, last summer, we were away to Hibs and we smashed them 5-0. And then we beat them 3-0 in the return leg. And I remember saying on the show that we did to which was probably my misplaced ego, is that I said at the time, I think, well, I hope we have a little bit more stiffer competition than this. So I was like, this won't be fun if it's just all goes our way like this. And little did I know, Andy, this was a situation which would not necessarily be a straightforward competition as I imagined back in August.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it has been tricky, hasn't it? And I think ever since that Hibernian tie, you know, we haven't really taken anyone to the cleaners as such. You know, it hasn't been plain sailing. We've lost games. We've obviously had a penalty shootout. We've drawn matches. You know, it's not been plain sailing by any stretch. And I think it's been a real learning curve, not only for the players, but also for us as fans, that, you know, we should know, really, you know, that the memory of Rapid Vienna and Helsingborg and these kind of teams should live large in our memory, really. We should know that European teams are good and technical. And even if they're not assembled, you know, for the same cost as we assemble our teams in the UK, they're excellent teams, you know, and a lot of the players do end up in the Premier League, don't they? So it's never going to be plain sailing. Obviously, that first tie was lovely, wasn't it? Nice little introduction. It was like a couple of extra pre-season friendlies, Craig.
It was like a couple of extra pre-season friendlies, and but we soon learned, just a few days later, in September 21st, 3-2 away at Legia Warsaw, and then a couple of weeks later, home 1-0 against Zrzinski, which I still can't say, after a last-minute header from John McGinn. And if we were under any illusions after those two games, after the Hibs games, Andy, we were given a rude awakening away in Legia, and also when Zrzinski came to town with their mayo bottles. I know, I think it was actually the team with the mayo bottles, but the level of competition was certainly much starker than what Hibs had to offer.
Yeah, oh, for sure. You know, these teams are, you know, well set up, well organised. They've got good players, good technical footballers. And I mean, the Zrzinski game was interesting in as much as, you know, we were really up against it to break them down. And eventually we did, and it always felt like we would. But I think it was the 94th minute, wasn't it, that McGinn got that header. And, I mean, the roof went off the place, didn't it, at Villa Park. It was a really hard-fought win. And if we hadn't got that win, we might have struggled to win the group, but, you know, maybe even to get out of it. If, you know, that would have been a bad start, wouldn't it? A win and a draw in those first two, a loss and a draw in those first two games. So it was good that we really needed that win after the Legia result.
We did. And then we bounced back in major style. This is a first kind of, this was where, I guess, this was almost our European coming out party. We go to AZ Alkmaar away, what was on paper the toughest challenge of the group stage, and we absolutely smashed them 4-1, bring them back to Villa Park, beat them 2-1 in a slightly closer game, and then we really kind of quickened on gas at that point, Andy, and the European charge is well and truly alive and well.
Yeah, I mean, that was a really good sort of few weeks, wasn't it? And I think it was, I mean, you might have to correct my memory here, but it felt like at the time we were in a really good patch of scoring goals. You know, sort of, I remember beating Brighton 6-1, West Ham 4-1. We felt like we were scoring a lot of goals against teams, and that was another one. And we just kind of tore through them, really, didn't we? Particularly in the first half. Really good, and by then, like you say, we were off and running and looking like we were taking control of the group, which was great. You know, that's what we wanted.
We did, and then we had the Mayo Gate, lots of trouble from the Legia Warsaw fans, police officers injured. If you want to go over that game, please jump back in the archives and check out. We covered that in detail at the time, but that kind of 2-1 win at home to Legia basically guaranteed us passage, and then we had a very drab 1-1 away result at the 14th of December, just to confirm it with back at Zrinski, and then we get into the round of 16, and this is where, which would eventually become our undoing, Andy, all of the dropouts from the Europa League, drop into our pool, including none other than Jordan Henderson's Ajax Amsterdam. And this was on the 7th of March, so we've had a good 3 month break. And then I remember this is the first time that fixture away in Ajax was the first time that I was like, oh, these players are really just not experienced. And I felt like not only that, but the Spurs result afterwards where we got smashed 4-0, that was the first time I was like, oh, they don't have, we don't have the experience to know how to handle these occasions. And the atmosphere in Amsterdam at the Johan Cruyff Arena was just incredible. And it did shrink us into our shells a little bit. And that is, you know, for me at the time and still now in retrospect, was completely understandable because we're novices at this level, Andy.
Yeah, I think that was, I felt the same on the night. It was clearly Ajax, as everyone says, not the force they once were. And it was a really, really tricky night for us, to be honest. I thought in the end, we probably managed it quite well, and it was good to get out of there with a draw. But like you say, it was clear that it was a bit of a new experience for some of our players. You know, a game that was a little bit of an eye-opener and kind of stopped us in our tracks a little bit, I think, in terms of the not the optimism necessarily, but maybe people started to think this might not be as easy as we sort of thought it might be.
Yeah. And then in the second leg, this is my standout memory. This will be my standout memory, I think, in years to come or months to come or whatever, in terms of looking at this return to Aston Villa, to then go back to Villa Park a week later and thrash Ajax 4-0 on the night. Just a majestic atmosphere, a majestic performance, with guaranteeing our passage into the quarterfinals. For me, I think that even eclipses the penalty shootout win at Lille. Just to see Ajax, again, European giants, yes, as you say, Andy, not in their best moment, but it's still Ajax. To have Ajax come to town and to absolutely thrash them, that is kind of a memory that will endure with me and be my kind of standout, I think, from this campaign. I mean, how was it for you? I think you may have been there, and if you weren't there, you were certainly watching on TV.
Yeah, I watched it. I couldn't make it that night. Had to give up my ticket. But yeah, it was absolutely sort of dominant display, and particularly, I think, in the second half when Box Office John came on, I think, and he certainly set the cat amongst the pigeons a little bit, didn't we? Didn't he scored an excellent goal, which nearly took the goalposts out of the ground. And of course, Diaby finished it off, didn't he? But yeah, I mean, just one of those nights. Of course, that was the night as well. Ollie Watkins got that injury, didn't he? Do you remember that? He went down with a cut on his knee, as it turned out. Yeah. But we all thought straight away from his reaction, oh God, you know, he's...
Yeah, he was thumping the turf, wasn't he?
Yeah.
it was
a real moment, really, where we all just... You could feel the sharp intake of breath all over Birmingham. It was kind of a real worry moment. But he was all right after. I think he missed the next game, and then he was fine, wasn't he? But tremendous win, and obviously that's the kind of result, isn't it, that goes into the history books, like the last time we beat them at Villa Park as well.
2-1, Barry and Larson. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, and that was a great night as well, and this was no different. The only difference, obviously, was that, you know, the context is that the opposition probably weren't as strong.
They're Jordan Henderson, Andy. What are you talking about?
And we're probably this is it. You know,
England superstar,
England stalwart there in the midfield.
I'm sure he'll be lacing up his boots in the Euros at the summer. Thank you, Gareth. And then it starts to get really hard. The Lille fixtures, Lille, I think, were the better side than us in both games. I think we did well to get through 2-1. And then we did very well to be able to cling on away at Lille and we get through, and then you're kind of thinking, okay, well, that was our bad performance almost out the way there. That was the time where we've really faced major adversity. At this point, this is April, this is only a few weeks ago, injuries have already bitten us really badly at this point. The players are beginning to fade a little bit, and that's where you start to think, okay, if we can play that badly with this many injuries and still we can make it through with the brilliance of Emi Martinez, maybe, just maybe, this is our year. And also, lots of people were saying, well, you know, Lille is the most difficult fixture that we have. And it certainly proved to be the second most difficult fixture that we would have. But we made it through, Andy, and we got back to to be in the semi-final. I mean, were you thinking the same as I was thinking when we win that penalty shootout? Okay, that was our moment of adversity here. We're gonna want to win this now.
Yeah, I think so. I think you sort of count your lucky stars after a result like that, don't you? But you sort of reflect on it in the way that I think every team that's probably ever won any kind of tournament, certainly any World Cup or anything like that, always has a dodgy game where they get through on penalties. Certainly, you know, Argentina would have had that in the last World Cup, had games that where they'd maybe consider themselves fortunate to get through. So you put it down to that, really. What I did, like today, just sort of reflecting on last night, I did consider whether in the long run it might have been better to have lost that game in a way, considering what's happened since in terms of our injury drop off in performances and that sort of thing. But you know, you can't beat a win like that, and I actually think it set us up really well for the next game. I think it was Bournemouth, and we expected the players to be absolutely shattered, and they put in a great performance that day, and I think that was off, you know, the adrenaline of winning that penalty shootout. It's always great to win like that, particularly away from home, and it certainly would have been a game that the travelling fans would have really enjoyed. I certainly enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy the match, but I enjoyed the penalty shootout. So it was good. It felt like the players really stood up. I think there were big performances. Obviously Martinez led the way, but I felt like Tielemans, you know, really showed what a tough competitor he is, really. We've perhaps seen him as being a bit lightweight and a bit, you know, a bit kind of, you know, not wanting necessarily be doing the running, but I think he really put in a shift that day and sort of showed that he can hold that midfield together. And
he's a class act. Really, I think, impressive. I think I agree with you. He started slowly, but he's a class act. And I think we've seen how much we've missed him in the last two games. I mean, without Tielemans, since he went off at against Chelsea, we're 2-0 up. I don't think it's a coincidence that we've been absolutely wretched ever since, because he was out of the team for a lot of earlier in the season. He was one of our fresher players. He hasn't been run into the ground so much. I mean, because if we remember back at the beginning of the season, he was popping up in press away on international duty, talking about problems with not playing, and he came to Villa to start and all that stuff, and we were like, well, do you talking on the pitch, mate? He started to do that, and his, I mean, we could probably have a 2-hour show just talking about Villa's injuries, but the Youri Tielemans injury against Chelsea has really been untimely and really damaging, I think. We have a comment here from Gary, who says, hi guys, we needed to prioritize one or the other in hindsight. What do you think about that, Andy? Do you think, in retrospect, now that we're out the Europa League and we're stuttering in the league, did we need to pick one or the other earlier in the season? Obviously too late now, but is that a mistake that we made?
I think there's an argument that we did prioritise. We prioritised the league. I think it was always the case that once we got into the last 12 or 10 games with a chance of finishing in the Champions League places, there's no doubt that would have been the focus for the manager. The cup competition then comes a little bit secondary. You obviously put everything into it, but I think they probably did, prioritise the position. And I think in terms of the club, obviously as fans, we want to see trophies, don't we? We want to see McGinn lifting trophies. We've been starved at for so long. But I think from a club perspective, from a business perspective and where the club want to be and the trajectory that they want to go on, Champions League is an absolute must if they can do it, and they're in a really good position to do it. And hopefully they can just get it over the line, either by Tottenham failing or by hook or by crook, two games.
And let's not forget,
yeah, absolutely,
we spent most of the season, Andy, thinking that fifth was going to be enough. And we've had fifth in the bank for weeks. So the fact that English teams have done so poorly in Europe, I mean, we were the last men standing, has really also screwed us over a little bit in that way, because we could have already been on the beach in the league games. We could have been playing the kids for the last 2 weeks, and then we could have really prioritised the Europa League, actually, because Champions League would have been done and dusted. But as the way the cookie crumbled, Germany, with an inspired by a Leverkusen, taking on all comers, and very odd that Arsenal and Man City and kind of fell in the way that they did. Brighton didn't do us any favours in Europe either. They had a little bit of a difficult run. Man United were a joke in Europe as well this season. So we've been a little bit unlucky in regards to that fifth place. But as you say, fourth can still be in the bag. We'll talk about Liverpool a little bit later on. All right, we've dillied and dallied for too long, and there's nowhere else to go now but talk about Olympiacos 2, Aston Villa 0. Lots of people think, Andy, this tie was over in the first leg. I really believed that we could win 2-0, and I was completely wrong. I think they were even better in the second leg. I think Olympiacos were completely comfortable. I don't think we worked the goalkeeper at all, other than a Leon Bailey drive, which stung his fingers in the first half. And although I think McGinn said and Emery said we were quite good on the ball, certainly much better in the first half, we concede a goal after 10 minutes, which is just so soft. We had talked about Luka Dean, certainly in that Legia Warsaw game away. He was culpable for at least two of those goals by just not tracking his man. And we saw the very worst of Luka Dean last night defensively for that first goal. The Olympiacos man is just on his own and left to tap into an empty net. And it wasn't and Luka Dean is on the edge of our 18-yard box. I don't know, sunbathing, having a cigar. Am I being too hard there, Andy? Or, I mean, it was schoolboy stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you'd have to know what his role is in that regard, and whether that's the striker is his man. Certainly, Torres had lost him as well, hadn't he? I think as well, the disappointment was, it's almost like, I mean, we know from old what Podence can do. And we've given him one chance to cross, and McGinn sort of slid in and said, no, that's not good enough. Here you go, have another go. And he's just played in the, I don't know who it was, but played in his teammate, hasn't he, really, really nicely to cross the ball. And he's found the striker there, completely unmarked, and it was an easy finish. Very disappointing way to concede. All the build-up was about, obviously keeping things tight. We couldn't afford to concede another goal, and at least until we got on the score sheet at least once. So it was really, really disappointing. I think Watkins had a little opportunity not long before that, which may be a little bit unlucky, but it did feel like we were in control of the game. We were taking it to Olympiacos before that, but then I think that goal just really knocked the stuffing out of us. And when we couldn't get back into it before half time, I think it was dead and buried then.
I mean, is there? I mean, my position on this, Andy, is really clear. I think if we just look at the substitutes bench, it's quite obvious. I mean, sometimes we can look at these things too deeply, and obviously, when we're doing shows like this, I think it's really important that we try and look a little bit deeper, and we sometimes go into granular detail about things. But sometimes a duck is just a duck, and sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. And when you look at the bench that Aston Villa had, it is a little bit frightening. These are players with respect that play for our youth team by and large. Kane Kessler-Hayden, Timur Ogbonnam, Finley Munro, Kellyman, Gauchi, Travis Patterson, Caden Young. With the best will in the world, those are not players who are typically on the bench. Ogbonnam is, let's be fair, but Duran, Olsen and Ogbonnam are the players that you would expect to see on the bench, and the rest of them, just not so much. And again, we have two goalkeepers named and we still have one substitute short. Which means your starting 11 then is they're completely gassed. They're done physically, they're done emotionally, and we've gone to the well one too many times and the well is now dry. That's my reading of it. I've seen other people on and obviously credit to Olympiacos as well. They deserve to win, so no qualms there. It's not their fault that we were so depleted, and they've taken advantage and they've executed their game plan perfectly. So credit where it's due there. But when I'm seeing comments from some Villa fans that we've bottled it, that this is typical Villa. I mean, I wish it was typical Villa. This is the second European semi-final in our history. I mean, if it was typical Villa and we were here every year, no problem. But this is not typical Villa. It's not typical for Villa to be in European semi-finals. I'm pretty old, and this is the first one of my lifetime. So it's not typical Villa, is it? So just comments like that. Sorry. just comments like that, and we've bottled it, and typical Villa, like it. I find it a little bit irksome. And I'm not here, it's not for me to tell you how to be a fan. You be a fan however you want, and I'm certainly never going to get into any arguments with people on Twitter. Are we being, as a fan base, are some of us being a little bit short-sighted? Are we a little bit ungrateful? Or am I wrong? Did we bottle it, Andy? What's your position?
No, we certainly didn't bottle it. It's nothing like that. I think that's a lazy kind of comment, really, isn't it? That's when people feel annoyed that we've lost, feel you know, sad that we've lost, or angry. They throw stuff like that around. It's not. They certainly didn't bottle it. They lost because they didn't have the energy. They didn't have the legs, and they come up against a pretty dynamic outfit with a really good coach. This coach, remember, won the Europa League last year. So this is a guy that knows what he's doing in Europe. You know, just because we've only heard of one of their players or whatever it is, it doesn't mean they're a bad outfit. They're in the semi-final for a reason. We certainly haven't bottled it. I think if anything, we've just been a little bit naive as a group. Me and Dan were talking about this on the podcast this week. You know that there are a lot of these teams we're coming up against are used to playing European competitions every year. You know, they know how to navigate it, and all right, our manager does, but the players, this is new for a lot of these players. And it'll stand them in good stead going forward. They've got to the semi-final. It's certainly not a bad effort. You know, best we've done in Europe, like you say, since 1982. And I think we have to be quite pleased and quite proud of that. Yes, it's disappointing. And yes, it's okay to criticise the performance on the night, and we can talk about things, when people can mention things and say things that didn't go well, or what, you know, that's all fine. And we can do that for every game. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, this is still a great achievement. We all wanted to be in Athens, you know, on the 29th of May. That's football, you know, we haven't made it. And there's no point suddenly turning on the players. You know, they've done a great job, and they're about to qualify for the Champions League. So it's hopefully, but they've had a bad week against this team, and they've it's disappointing because it feels as well like a bit of a thrashing, doesn't it? And,
it does.
And it feels like we haven't
really. It was a thrashing.
We should have done.
Let's not try and dress it up. 6-2 is 6-2 across two legs is a beating. We have a couple of Olympiacos fans in the chat here. So, Lycoman, just want to offer you some congratulations, and to all the Olympiacos fans who are watching. Hope you win. Go on to win it. Fully deserve it. Obviously, as an Aston Villa channel, we have to talk about things through the lens of Aston Villa and the context to us. But full credit to Olympiacos. I don't think you'll find any, or too many. You'll always find one or two, but I don't think you'll find too many Villa fans who are going to begrudge Olympiacos will say that you didn't deserve to win. So congratulations to them. Gary,
yeah,
go ahead.
Just like to add, sorry, Craig, that their fans at Villa Park were absolutely magnificent. Absolutely, probably the best of the away fans we've had. Absolutely tremendous. And I think last night, when you see how they are at home, they're getting there 2 hours before the game and creating an atmosphere. It's just absolutely tremendous. So yeah, I hope they do go on and win it. I hope they win it in their rival's stadium.
Well, that remains to be seen. I will certainly try and watch the final if I'm available. I'd like to see it and see what happens. I've invested enough so much time into this Europa Conference League I will like to watch the final and see what happens. Gary wants to know your thoughts on Diaby, and we can talk about some individual performances. I think that's fair. Diaby did well, obviously, in the first game, but he seems to be one of those players, and I'm very wary of the Leon Bailey effect here, and Diaby may come back next year a different beast, but certainly with Diaby, I do sometimes get the feeling that he is not contributing enough off the ball, and if he's not completely happy, it seems his performance has suffered. Is it that is he just another one, Andy, running on fumes? I mean, I guess we can review it now. What do you think of Diaby? And this is our record signing. Should we have been looking to him a little bit more as a leader to drag us through, or is he just not that guy?
I think it's interesting with Diaby, actually, when you think he came off, didn't he, after 57 minutes last night? And bearing in mind, Leon Bailey's knee was strapped up and he'd had an absolute whack on his knee in the first half and was in agony. and yet, Diaby was the one that came off. I mean, it was telling, I think, that. I think it would have been a night to take Bailey off. You know, and give his knee some rest for Monday night. But went with Diaby, and I think that's symptomatic of the fact that at the moment he's not changing things for us. He's not imposing himself on games. He's contributing in terms of goals and assists, as we've talked about. His numbers are not bad this season, but in terms of the game and affecting the match, He's just not doing it. Leon Bailey, sorry to switch on to Bailey, but this man has become an absolute warrior. He's, you know, considering all the criticism, he's had some criticism off us. We called him, I think, gingerbread ankles or something. I can't remember what it was, but he was
gingerbread,
you know,
Bailey.
Obviously injured an awful lot, and we didn't feel. Yeah, we didn't feel necessarily you know, putting the, you know, the putting in what he could at times, maybe. But he's like a man possessed at the moment. He's absolutely at the forefront of everything Aston Villa do, and he will not give up. His attitude and his mental strength is incredible, I think. And he's been playing with an injury now for weeks, with that knee strapped up.
Not to interrupt last night, would we have said this about Bailey 2 seasons ago? Would we have said, oh, this is a leader. This is someone who's going to play through the pain for us. Would we have said that, do you think?
No, this is exactly it. We would not. It's been a complete turnaround, not only in his performances, but in his whole psychology and the way he approaches matches. He's a lead. And you can see it the way he celebrates goals now. You know, and that shot of him when he came on against Lille, you know, trying to get everyone focused and get everyone, you know, focused on just getting that goal and getting to extra time. I just think this is a guy who just is impressing me more and more every week. Not just with his play, but with his attitude. I just think he's an absolute warrior for us.
So speaking of absolute warriors, someone who is an absolute warrior for Aston Villa, and I think who was getting a lot of heat online, is Matty Cash. And we've talked about Matty Cash a lot on the show, but I want to say that in terms of whatever you feel about Matty Cash's qualities, and we have questioned them here, particularly his crossing, and I also don't think he's a right winger, but one thing I would never question with Matty Cash and all the lads really is their hunger, their desire, their heart, and their willingness to just put it all on the line for Aston Villa. And I can forgive players not being good enough, because we've had plenty of players over the years who weren't great but would, you know, kind of die for the shirt. I know that's a bit of a cliche, but I don't think, yeah, I think you can question some of the players' quality, and Matty Cash comes into that. I think he's probably the weakest technical player in our starting 11. But what he lacks in technical ability and ball progression, I think he certainly makes up for in terms of heart, spirit, and just being a good egg around the club. Andy, I mean, what do you think? Lots of people are saying that Matty Cash has come to the end of the line here at Aston Villa. I think he can hang around. Gary thinks that Cash should stay as a squad player. Where do you sit?
I think he's. I would like to see him stay. I like Matty Cash. I like what he brings to the team, to the squad. You can obviously make comments, and I'm sure, you know, I'm convinced the Monchi and Emery are looking at that position the same as they're looking at the left back position and maybe one or two other areas of the team as needing to strengthen. I think we weakened that position when we let Ashley Young go in the summer. But Cash has been tremendous for the club. He won the Player of the Year 2 years ago, I think, or 3 years ago. He never gives anything less than his best. And he offers something, I think. And if he's prepared to be part of the squad, then absolutely, you know, love to keep him, because what a player to have, what a player to be able to bring in and use in a kind of, you know, in different ways, in a back four, in the midfield or whatever, or use off the bench. I think that's actually where he's best, when he comes off the bench. I think he injects something into the team. I think he's really good. I think he maybe lacks a little bit of confidence to go forward, and you see this kind of checking back an awful lot, but he's only doing what he's given license to do, and I think it's about keeping the ball the way Villa play, isn't it? So
yeah, and I think also
I'm more happy with him, more than happy.
His level as a right winger was he was kind of a rotation option for a mid-table championship side. And that's not me being unkind, that's just the fact of it. He was a mid-table winger for Forest, didn't always play. And it wasn't until, I think, Sabri Lamoshi moved him to right back that he came into his own. I think that he's definitely a Premier League right back. But when you're asking him to be a right winger in a European semi-final against really wily, wise, excellent Greek opposition, I think that that might be a little bit unfair to him, actually. And I think it's probably fair to say that we wouldn't necessarily see him there if we had some of the other options available, like a Tielemans or a Morgan Rodgers or a Zaniolo or a Buendia. I can go on and on. I won't. So I think that's also something to consider too. So Andy, we go out. We've gone out. I've still avoided talking about the game, but another two goals from El Kabai. He has absolutely had our players on toast. And I said yesterday in the group chat, and I'll say it again here. I think there's a certain type of player that we just cannot deal with without Tyrone Mings, and I think this guy is one of them. A word for El Kabai. He's been excellent, Andy, and he's absolutely ripped us limb from limb in these two legs.
He certainly has. Five goals. I mean, without him, we go three, don't we? You know, yeah. It's that simple. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, he's obviously got a lot of pace. I think positionally he's excellent. The way he makes his runs, the way he he's very intelligent in that regard. And he's made our defensive line look very pasty, to say the least. He's deserved. I think he's the highest goal scorer in the European competitions this season. Tremendous performance, but obviously not overly happy about it, Craig.
Well, I just wanted to give him his flowers because, look, you know, when there's occasionally an opposition player just comes and does you. Our former manager, I remember him rocking up to Villa Park once. This is probably the early to mid 2000s. And Steven Gerrard just absolutely killed us. He was just a one-man band. He ran the whole pitch. He was everywhere. He was bigger than everyone, stronger than everyone, technically better than everyone. And there's just occasionally, and I don't think El Kabai is that guy, but sometimes a player just kills you and you have to give them the flowers. So flowers are given. Let's move on. So Aston Villa now, Andy, we have two games remaining. We are at home against Liverpool on Monday night under the lights. Win that game and we're in the Champions League. Unfortunately for us, Liverpool seem to have hit a rich vein of form, and as have Crystal Palace. Now, if we were playing Roy Hodgson's Crystal Palace from earlier in the season, I would be pretty happy to say that we could win or lose the Liverpool game. It wouldn't matter. We would go to Roy Hodgson's Crystal Palace and turn them over quite comfortably. Particularly as that's 2 weeks away, and I would like to think we'll have at least Tielemans back and maybe Moreno and Zaniolo and possibly even Rodgers as well. And maybe even Buendia, Andy, who's back in training. But anyway, I would have been really confident to tell you that we're going to beat Crystal Palace anyway, so it doesn't matter what Spurs have done. But just in the last week or two, both Liverpool and Crystal Palace have just come out of nowhere and found a bit of form. So how are you feeling about the Liverpool game, first of all, Andy? You'll be there, Villa Park, Monday night under the lights. Champions League qualification is still in our own hands. But we are depleted and we're weary, Andy. Can we do it against Liverpool on Monday?
Yeah, I think we can. I'm going to say, I was talking to Dan about this on the podcast this week, and absolutely think we can go there and at home, obviously, but we can just put in one last big effort. I'm really hoping that Tielemans will be available. Moreno, maybe even Rodgers, we'll see. And we can just leave everything out there for this one. I'm also hoping, I'm really hoping that Burnley do something on Saturday, because if they can get any kind of result at White Hart Lane, I think it's at Tottenham. then I think it's over as well, isn't it? So yeah, it's hanging a little bit in the balance, and I think our recent form has made it that way. But we can do it, and we can, and I think also it'd be good to do it off our own bat, under our own steam, rather than relying on Spurs to kind of fall away. I think if we can go and beat Liverpool or Palace and put the seal on it, that'll feel a lot better, and the chance to get to 70 points as well would be an absolutely remarkable achievement for this team. So just hopeful, Craig, you know, just going well, to every game expecting and hoping,
you can only,
hoping that we can do something.
Well, it is, we'll know pretty soon. It is tomorrow at 3 o'clock kickoff, Tottenham at home against Burnley. I have watched enough of Burnley this year to know that I don't think they have a cat's chance in hell of beating Spurs. Burnley are a team, talk about the Aston Villa goal giveaway club. Burnley take it to a new level. Burnley will give you two goals every game. It's a miracle they're not mathematically relegated. I think what company is trying to do is admirable, but foolhardy. But this isn't a Burnley show, and I think Tottenham are going to beat them 3 or 4 nil. And then the big one, Andy, if we don't beat Liverpool on Monday night and the Champions League qualification is allowed to roll on for another moment, the big one is 8 p.m. on Tuesday night, 24 hours after the Aston Villa-Liverpool game. Tottenham are at home to Manchester City. And this is the fixture that most all the Villa fans are looking at as being the one that could seal the deal. Tottenham do have a decent record against Man City, and they are at home. But we also have the added wrinkle of there are lots of Tottenham fans that do not want Arsenal to win the league. So does that come into it? But this is the thing. This is what you're saying. I mean, there's so many permutations still. Permutations. Yeah, that's right. There's so many ways this can go. It would just be beautiful if we can go against Liverpool and take it out of doubt, take it out of our hands. Any players that need resting then can rest. We have a Copa America coming up in the summer. There's a Euros in the summer. So some of our bruised and battered lads can take a minute there to rest. All right. What is your score prediction for the Liverpool game, Andy? Aston Villa versus Liverpool, Monday night under the lights. What are you thinking?
I'm trying to remember what I said on the podcast. I think I said 3-1. No, 3-2. I said 3-2 to Villa. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to stick with that. Why not? Ollie Watkins to get to 20 goals, maybe 21.
I happen to think that Liverpool are going to give us a hiding. So, sorry about that.
Okay.
Not to piss on anyone's chips, but I don't think... I think it's going to be 2 or 3 nil to Liverpool. I think Liverpool are literally the last team that you want to be playing. Gary says 3-1 Liverpool as well. Liverpool, who are fresh, starting to get some players back. They've got nothing really to play for, but the end of the Klopp era. Look, I mean, if Klopp really likes Aston Villa, he'll do us a favour and play the kids, but I'm not sure he'll do that. I'm predicting a 2-0 defeat to Liverpool, and I think Man City beat Tottenham comfortably on Tuesday. And I think that's it. We're in the Champions League. But I don't see where the goals are coming from. I think Diaby and Bailey together aren't really working. Bailey's playing on one leg. Watkins, it's not like he's been missing a hatful of chances. We've just stopped the chance creation. Morgan Rodgers isn't there. Jacob Ramsey isn't there. Again, I don't want to belabor the point here, but it's like we just have to play, basically, we have to either play Duran, who's, you know, interesting but not necessarily viable, but I don't see it. I'm going 2-0 Liverpool, and but we're saved on Tuesday by Man City. Although not really saved by Man City, I mean, we got the points, like we did it, we did the work to get here, so it's not like Man City are giving it to us, but that's my thoughts. All right, We have been here for long enough. It has been an adventure, a European adventure. I'm very sorry that it's over, but we know regardless of what happens, we're going to be back in Europe next season. So gather around again. We'll be back to cover Aston Villa's Europa League campaign or our Champions League campaign next August. Thank you all so much for watching the channel. Thank you to our contributors. I think we had we've had James on, we've had Cole on, Andy. You've been a stalwart of the show. Any last words to sign off from our European campaign?
Just what a great experience. Great to be back in Europe. We'll be back in Europe again next year, and it's exciting, isn't it? It's exciting. We just need to wait and see what the competition is. But yeah, I've really enjoyed being on, Craig. Great channel, great show. Thanks for doing it. And we'll be back next year.
We'll be back next year with a bang. Again, thank you. Again, over 5,000 of you have watched this show, which is just incredible since it's been born. Again, we have a donut or a bagel marketing budget. So please like, please subscribe, please share on your WhatsApp groups and your social medias. Thank you so much. Very sad that Aston Villa had to bow out of Europe. But I, for one, am one proud Aston Villa fan. It's been a dream come true to be back in Europe this year. And we have so many amazing memories from that European adventure. Obviously disappointed that it came to an end at the penultimate hurdle before the final. But even so, thank you to the players. Thank you to Unai Emery. And thank you to the owners. And thanks to all of you. All right, that is all we have time for. We will see you next season. We may pop up with a bonus episode or two throughout the summer to look at transfers and other comings and goings at Villa Park. But for now, it is goodbye from us. And of course, up the Villa, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Gather Round Again, an Aston Villa podcast. Please like down below and... subscribe. Up the Villa.
Daley and Atkinson on one of those great runs. What a run by Daley and Atkinson. Atkinson again.
And it's Dwight Yo.